It is Office Hours, the human experience, and I like to experience my humanness with Bucky and Leah, Bucky O'Neill, Leah Notariani. Thank you at 5 a.m. in Hawaii for joining us.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Always great to be here, Dave. You know that.
So much sunshine. It's you guys missed some fun here with all types of odd weather, but it's been beautiful since the heavy rains. Anyway, as we kind of come into the mid-February season, there's, I think, a reality that sets in from December and January. Right after Valentine's Day, people seem to take inventory on the year in itself. And, you know, curious, because you guys coach a lot of people, facilitate a lot of people, and have a general consciousness of consciousness, you know, what is your pulse, let's say, on what you're seeing out there with people, any patterns that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I think, you know, February is a great time because a lot of people have went through holidays and New Year's and all of the things, but a lot of people that are running major companies didn't, like, December wasn't a time for a break, and neither was January. And I found that there was a lot of times that, you know, you're busy doing year end, wrapping a lot of things up, that February kind of gives you this little quick snippet of a break if you choose it. And truthfully, like, you can choose to take a break whenever you want. And I think that's really important too. But I do think that there's an opportunity in February to really reestablish and make sure that you're still on the same trajectory that you want to be on for the rest of the year, for the first, you know, ending up the first quarter and what that looks like. So for me, my perspective, I think January and December were super busy, like blink and then here's February. So it's really important to also be able to reflect more consistently and compound that reflection, that you're not just like running and waiting for a quarter to, you know, do a reflection or pivot or shift.
Yeah. The thing that comes up for me is just thinking about the lunar calendar as compared to, you know, the traditional calendar. You know, I think the end of January is more of a beginning of a year time for people. For me personally, what it feels like is that February is like settling in into the year. And there's like this more of like a, I'm in my pocket now as far as what I'm doing and what I'm creating. I'm just noticing that across the board. I think, January and December can feel very, exciting, right? And a little bit scattered at times. And it feels like people are settling in and really leaning into what this year is going to be. It's like, you know, we're past the warm-up phase of the workout, right? And we're like getting into that part of the workout where it's like, okay, I'm warm and now my body's functioning and I'm ready to kind of start. That's kind of what it feels like for me.
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, looking at the year or time frame, a linear time frame, lunar or Mayan, it doesn't matter what the time frame is, can also create resistance for people. And one of the things that people do is create illusions of resistance instead of illusions of progress that stop them from where they want to be. And they use their planning as almost an excuse of not executing. I find the biggest challenge that we have with AI, for example, is that, you know, it's not the fear of AI is going to, you know, knock down the grid and human existence is not going to, you know, it's the ultimate weapon. It's really more that it allows us to avoid execution. It's like, well, you know, I hear this a lot. I have so many, you know, different people that I work with. It's like everything's on pause because they're using AI now. they can't do what they want to do because they now have to transform everything utilizing AI. What other excuses do you see that people make? Because it is, to me, I see a definite settling in, and you get these schools of people of excitement or panic or anxiety or frustration or whatever it is. You know, what are some of the other things that people get lost into instead of just, you know, executing on that plan, which I know both of you help people facilitate, and people close to me, the work that you've done has been exponential and quantitative of, you know, getting clarity on, okay, stop burying yourself into AI. What are you actually going to effing do?
Yeah. I think when you're looking at well, you know, the way that we started this was like, it's February, New Year's, all the things. But if you're consistently taking action and moving things forward, you don't need like this big reset because you're just riding the wave and you're doing all of the things and it's just continual. So I think that having this like man-made pause is kind of, it's been an interesting thing for me because that was one thing that we didn't do is that we kept just living our life and then we took breaks when we wanted to and we just are riding this wave. And I think when you do that, you realize like, we waste so much time just like planning and creating things that one of the things that Bucky and I do whenever we're having like more of a business meeting or we're working with clients, we schedule it, we make it a priority. We put it in the calendar and we take action on those things versus it's just kind of lingering. We're going to do this thing. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's like, no, when is it going to happen? What are we going to do? And how are we going to move this forward? And when you do things like that, it lands the plane and then you're able to go on to the next and then build. So that's been something that we've always done.
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing that people get caught up in is the story around their identity and how that conflicts with what it is that they want to create mentally. And there's all kinds of different examples of, you know, I've had this experience in the past of who I am and what it looks like to run this business and what it's going to require of me to run this business and what it's going to cost me, right, to run this business. And living in that illusion of this is what happened in the past or this is my experience of the past and therefore it's going to be my experience of the future. You know, even though they say they want to grow a business, even though they say they want to achieve these things, these underlying subconscious conflicts are really dangerous in when it comes to progress, when it comes to efficiency, when it comes to doing the things that you say that you want to do, because they're so subtle. They're just normalcies that people have just accepted. They've accepted this idea that this is how it is. And without identifying those things, they wonder why they're always in that battle within themselves in order to be productive or to get things done that are right in front of them to get done or see things right in front of them that give them the opportunities to exponentially grow their lives and their businesses. So I think that's really, you know, for me in our work, when we work with clients and we work with, you know, different people who are running businesses and are wanting to grow exponentially, you know, that's the thing, the invisible thing for them is, you know, I've been to all the different things and they just can't identify the subconscious identity or story that they've attached to their success.
Yeah, that attachment is interesting. I think also one of the things that I do and love about doing business with both of you is that there's this idea of the game within the game. You know, the human experience is indicative of learning lessons and it's just a journey. And although in business there can be conflictual and tenuous situations, it's just a game. And, you know, I know because I've had more conversations with Bucky, we've had fun with it. Like, you know, there's times where it's like, all right, we're going through like certain issue criteria. Then it's just like, we're laughing at each other going, all right, whatever it is, let's just figure this out. And I see so many people not being able to do that. You know, they exacerbate the situation because time, emotion, and value changes and the communication, if emotional, when people care about things, can create more interference, not less. And one of the things I admire about you and Leah as facilitators is every time there is a situation where time, emotion, or value has changed, it's a facilitation of what's easiest and best for both. And we don't have situations that accelerate. They just aggregate and, you know, it takes a long time though. What do you do? Because I know, you know, the two things that we have to deal with is people not doing, you know, us wanting it more than they want it for themselves or two, not having people respond and taking themselves way too seriously. Is there a communication that helps to elevate the awareness of, hey man, this isn't a big deal. You know, like literally let's just get back onto track. Or are there some people that don't do the work and can't get out of their own way that you just write off?
I think when you've been coaching people as long as we have and such a wide variety of clients over, for me, a decade, you too, is, you know, there are people that you eventually realize that, you know, maybe this is the stop that they need to get off on. And, you know, that was a period of time that they needed to come and, you know, coach with us. And that's of you know, of course. I think the bigger thing, though, is that when you're working with somebody, having that person have a level of teaching them how to be self-aware of themselves and of their own patterns, and then how to emotionally de-escalate so they can see things clearly. I think that's such a big, powerful thing as a coach and as a mentor, is some people can have their emotions run so deep and so far, and when they get triggered, they can't de-escalate and see anything clearly. And it's like when you shake a snowball, the snow globe, and you see all the snow. It's like, and all that emotion needs to settle for them to see. And I think in business, if people can't learn to regulate their emotions and de-escalate and move through challenge and conflict and problem, it's always going to be there. And when you realize business is a game and it's a fun game, and when you can learn to play with the right people that have the right integrity and right emotional awareness and consciousness, you're able to move through things so much easier, and you can be so much more agile in how you both navigate challenge, conflict, and opportunity. So I think it's really important when you look at those skill sets, whether you're developing that and getting support with a coach or also doing the work yourself, whoever is listening, I think those are really important things.
Yeah. You know, you have something to say, share, David?
Oh, no, I was going to just say that is such a common experience, and I hope people take note of it. And yeah, just give us that quick tidbit, and then we have Carlos in the green room.
Yeah. The thing that comes up for me is, you know, you got to be at a certain level of awareness in order to play the game consciously, right? So, you know, like, just to reiterate what Leah's saying, you know, our goal is not to, it's not our work to do for anybody. And I think that's part of the trap that sometimes coaches get into, is they feel like they're the ones that are going to create this change or facilitate this outcome or produce this transformation. And this idea of teaching people self-awareness, or teaching people the rules of the game of consciousness, so that they can consciously move through their life, business, and relationships in a way that is not only just connected to the identity or the experience of themselves, but also connected to the identity of the experience of that's outside of themselves, and then integrated into the life expression through self. And I think when you can, you know, it takes a certain, for us personally, you know, I think this is true for every coach, honestly, is to find your group of people, or the group that you're meant to be working with, that are at a level where your work is actually the most valuable for them. I think a lot of the challenges that people have as coaches is they're mismatching their expertise in a number of ways to who they think it's most useful for. And therefore, there's a disconnect. And one of the things that we've done, if we've had a very strong line of who we work with, how we work with them, when we work with them, and the dynamics of that work, because we know that there's a certain persona, there's a certain level of awareness, there's a certain outcome that we are excellent at. And we can do a lot of things. But for me personally, you know, for me, I want to help the people that we can in the deepest ways.
I like that. Speaking of helping people in the deepest way, Carlos Whitaker is waiting in the wings on this holiday and has a book out in September of last year. Welcome, Carlos Whitaker.
How are you guys?
Phenomenal would be an understatement. These guys are in Hawaii, so
they're not doing bad.
No, California is not bad either. You know, connection is something that all three of us talk about a lot, Carlos. And yeah, you wrote the book on Reconnected, and looking at, you know, a lost art of being human. And we talked earlier about AI, and I believe AI makes humans more human. For me, you know, I wrote a book called Connected to Goodness, and you wrote a Reconnected book, and my paradigm or perspective has changed about being connected at all times, and what am I doing to interfere with it? And so I'd love for someone who's taken an intentional journey of understanding reconnection in this, you know, facilitated way of being human.
Yeah.
Is there a nuance of always being connected when we talk about reconnected?
Yeah. You know, I think that, especially doing what we do, right? Talking to screens a lot for a living, like these aren't bad. I try to tell people all the time, like this is neither good nor bad. This is neither good nor evil. This is just a piece of glass with some chips in it. We can make it what it is. But what I realized, David, to your point and your question, is that I had actually lost the connection, I think, to my humanity a little bit, because I was constantly looking at the 6 inches of LCD. So I made a dramatic decision, and I didn't look at a single screen for 2 months. You know, and for someone that makes his money, makes his living talking to screens, I jumped all in feet first and lived with monks, lived with Amish farmers, and tried to reconnect with, okay, maybe what are some things that we've forgotten how to do because of these things? And the goal isn't to get rid of screens. No, of course not. I use AI every day. Like, I'm a big fan of where things are going, but the goal is just to maybe reconnect with the lost art. And I think that's the pain point a lot of people are realizing is, gosh, maybe I wasn't created to be connected 24/7 to a screen. Maybe we've lost some of this interpersonal thing that we were supposed to do. So I've really learned a lot about wondering, which we don't do anymore. Wondering is a lost art form. It's gone. Nobody wonders anymore. The second you start wondering, you Google. Google's the wonder killer. And so, you know, we don't wonder anymore. Like all of these things that I had to do for those 2 months, I was like, oh my gosh, maybe we were created to not know everything. You know, like what if our souls and our psyche weren't created with the capacity to consume the amount of content we consume? So how can I give people handlebars on how to reconnect with some of those spaces? And so, yes, I believe that people are desperate and people are feeling the pain point of maybe over connection, and it's not really connection at all.
Nice.
Yeah. Carlos, I think it's so incredible what you've done to be able to do that. My curiosity leads to, what have been some of the biggest lessons that you learned throughout that journey that you're now implementing into your life and your human experience, and how you're navigating the world from a different level of connection and relativity?
That's a great question. I think the ground zero for everybody is getting to a place of understanding exactly how much of our lives we're spending looking at these screens. And so I think that's the first thing, you know, I tell anybody to do is to go to your screen time, which you don't want to look at it, right? On Sundays, when the notification comes, it says you have averaged, and we just swipe it away, right? We don't look at it. Like, nobody wants to look at it. But I looked at it one day, which led me on this journey, and I did the math. And the math is the thing that messes us all up. The average American spends 5 hours a day on their phone. I was spending 7 hours a day. I did the math. That was 49 hours a week. That was 100 days a year. And if I live to be 82 years old, I'll spend 12 and a half years of my life looking at a screen. And that, I think that's the initial assignment I give everybody. Okay, let's look at it. Now, 7 hours a day. What if I just went to 5 hours a day? Just 2 hours a day. What if I figured out how to do that? I'm not getting rid of my stuff. I'm still doing everything I need to do. Guess what that gives me back? That gives me back just 2 hours a day. It gives me back 2 months a year. 2 months a year. So suddenly when you do that, it gives you the wherewithal to go like, okay, there's changes that need to be made. And some of the simple things I've done, really simple, is, you know, I bought this thing. It's really the craziest invention you've ever heard of. I went to Target and I plugged it in next to my bed, and it's called an alarm clock. It was the craziest invention I've ever heard. All it does is wake me up. That's literally all it does. It just it tells me what time it is, and it wakes me up in the morning. Studies show that the average American spends 30 minutes before they go to sleep and 30 minutes after they wake up scrolling on their screen. When you plug your phone into another room and you just have an alarm clock, you literally save 1 hour a day of screen time. So, like, what are different ways that you can implement these things? Not getting rid of these things. I still use this all day, every day. I still make incredible content that helps a lot of people, but I'm being more intentional, right? Like, I deleted all the news apps off my phone. I deleted X off my phone. What are the things that were like drowning me in the news? And guess what I did? I subscribed to this thing they throw in my front yard every morning. It's the craziest invention. It's called the newspaper. And I walk out and I pick up this newspaper. And guess what? I read all the stories. I know what's happening on planet Earth. But when I'm done reading the newspaper, if anything else happens on planet Earth, I'll find out tomorrow morning, right? So, like, there's all these tiny little things that we can do that will literally give us years and years back of living, because that's really what everybody wants to accomplish.
Mm.
So good.
I love that texture that a newspaper paper brings or a clock brings. There's like a different texture that shows up in life. You know, one of the things that you talked about earlier is you talked about this idea of wandering. And I think that's a really important thing. And also the capacity that we don't have the capacity to hold as much information or that we shouldn't know all things. And I think it's a big part of the things that we talk about from a spiritual context when it comes to the evolution of self is like, you know, we're not meant to know every answer. And I think the need to know the answer is actually what keeps us limited, right? Yeah. This need to say like, hey, what does this mean? Or what is the meaning of life? Or what am I supposed to be doing in my life? And it just limits us so massively when it comes to the expression of who we are.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your journey in wandering and you know what that looks like as someone who is new to this concept of what that really means to wander and to explore and to adventure. In Hawaii, we would call it, I tell all the cousins whenever we go, I'm like, hey, we're just going to go cruise.
Yeah.
And they're like, where are we going? Where are we going? What are we going to do? I'm like, no, we're just going to go cruise. We're just going to drive around and cruise and we're going to figure out whatever we want to do. And they're like, I want to go somewhere. So tell us a little bit about the philosophy around that for you.
Oh gosh. You know, I lived for 16 days with 22 Benedictine monks. And they moved so slowly. Everything they did was so slow. And I'm a hustler. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to get things done. I want to learn. I want to go, go. But what I quickly realized, the whole, you know, there's wandering and there's wondering. And I feel like they go together. They go hand in hand. We've lost our ability to get lost and find our way, right? We have GPS that tells us where to go left and right. I didn't have a phone to tell me where to go. You know, I had to figure out how it is when I lived with the Amish, how to get to the feed barn that Farmer Willis wanted me to go pick up a barrel of hay in my on my e-bike. And I'm like asking neighbors how to get there. And I was getting lost. But I realized, gosh, maybe we were actually created to get lost and find our way. And there's no one else, no one on planet Earth gets lost anymore because we have GPS telling us where to go everywhere. Well, I also think that has an effect on our souls. I feel like people don't get lost and find their way on maps in vehicles. I feel like people don't get lost and find their way inside themselves either anymore because there's always something or somebody telling them exactly what to do, exactly when to wake up, exactly how to do it. And we just don't trust our gut anymore, our intuition anymore. Like that is there for a reason. And so listen, as a guy that spends his, you know, the majority of my time talking to Instagram, talking to YouTube, constantly getting inundated with information, I did realize I think the high stress and anxiety of my life quite possibly might be coming from, and go with me here for one second. People used to say, and I used to agree with them, that they were addicted to their phones. And after my little experiment, I quickly realized we're not addicted to our phones. That would be like a heroin addict saying that they're addicted to the needle. See, the phone is simply the needle. What comes through the needle is either going to give us health or it's going to hurt us. So we're not addicted to the phone. We're addicted to, and this is where we're coming from in this conversation, to the control that knowledge gives us. So suddenly we all feel like we've got this false sense of control because we know everything. The truth is we're actually not in control. Like we think we are, but we're just not. And so I think when I start helping people through my books or documentary or my courses, realize that you can let go of the drug of control, of the drug of knowledge, and you'll actually find a lot more freedom in wondering and not knowing everything. If you're ever at a dinner party and someone asks a question or someone starts talking about, yeah, you know, I went to this concert in 1997. I wonder what what was the set list? You literally can Google and find out the set list of exactly every single thing that you wanted to know, every concert you've ever been to. Don't let them Google. Stop people from Googling and just wonder. And the more you wonder, the more you wander, I think the more human you become.
Carlos, I think it's extremely helpful when people have a perspective between these three different experiences that we have. One, intelligence, which, you know, if you understand silicon quartz or the science behind data and the capture of data, that in such a small capacity we can hold basically what is the Akashic records. And then beyond intelligence, to understand intuition and then also inspiration, that this disconnected interference, as I call it, between the spirit and ourselves, the human side of what this show is about and what, you know, our friendship, Leah, Bucky and I are blessed to talk about. I will give you something to think about before we invite you back. I tend to think that we limit ourselves when we don't utilize the needle or the phone as a tool to practice intuition or as a tool to practice inspiration.
Yeah.
As long as, like you said, we understand the intelligence and capacity that it has to utilize intelligence. So a lot of times I think we're, just like AI, we put these stigmas on the needle and, sure. and we forget, wait, hold on a second. What the message, Carlos, I hear him saying, and I could be way off because it's my meaning, is we need to practice intuition and inspiration much more than just being fed intelligence in some social silos. You got it. In your monk experience, I think we need to learn more about, we purposely keep these interviews short so that people want more. I guarantee people want more of Carlos Whitaker. check him out. Easiest place to get him, Instagram is LOSWHIT. CarlosWhitaker.com. Easy to find. Check out his book, Reconnected. 7 screen-free weeks with monks and Amish farmers helped him to recover the lost art of being human. That's what we're here for. The human experience is a perfect match. Carlos, we'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. See you guys.
Thanks, Carlos.
Great job.
Great to have you.
I love that.